And we are back. Episode number 83 of Black and a Half. I am Silas Lindenstein here with my good friend.
Joe Greenhour.
Joe Greenhour is back filling in for Manny Martin.
We're flipping it around today. Yeah. I'm like Patrick Stewart playing Othello.
You are. You are very much that. If I look at you most days, I like, you know who he is? He's like Patrick Stewart playing Othello.
Yeah.
That's what he is. Today's a fun episode. We have Adam Hegg in. He's artistic director of Turbo Turkey Productions, and they have a show coming out this weekend. So a superhero show, superhero.
He was play. A super guy too. Yeah. I liked him.
Really nice guy. He's funny. He's a writer, director, actor, all of it. He's a triple threat, I guess you could say.
He didn't seem threat.
Joe's a triple threat.
Am I?
He's old. He's got a job.
He farts a lot.
All of it. excuse me. We have a lot of fun talking to him. I debut a new segment at the end of it, so you get to check that out.
I kind of screwed up for
him. Yeah, I might edit it. Who knows? Yeah. so it sounds smooth, at least. But we talk about The Mandalorian a little bit. Came out a little teaser on that. They hadn't seen it yet. I, of course, jumped right on Disney Plus because I got to, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm tired or not. I'm not responsible. Right.
Tired. You have younger children that are still in house.
So I should go to bed and get sleep. Yeah. I don't do that.
Right. But it also means you're not leaving in the morning.
Yeah, that's true. I'll be around. I got to be okay with them watching things. And I'm not usually.
I can't watch stuff with my kid. He gets so scared.
Yeah.
He gets scared of everything.
Yeah.
Like the fucking Care Bear scared him. Like, I can't watch this. Like, what? You can't watch what? We were watching Pokemon. We were watching Pokemon, and the monsters don't scare him. The bad guys scared him. Right?
What? Aren't the bad guys monsters?
No, no. Like, the bad guys have their own Pokemon. They're always trying to... Oh, okay. They're twins or whatever. I don't know what they are. Boyfriend, girlfriend. What are those people? Anyway, I was like, why are you scared of them? He goes, they're mean. He didn't care about monsters.
Yeah, when Sierra was really little... What freaked her out were characters that were deceitful.
Yeah.
That they seemed like they were the good guys, like helping out the guy, and then turned out that they were bad. Like monsters, I think, I forget if it was Inc. or University. There's right. one of them that switches. Like he seems like he's the helpful, goofy little
the salamander guy.
He's all fine. Right. And then suddenly turns out she was bawling. About this. Like yeah. she would always be upset.
She put her trust in this character.
Yeah, so when somebody turned, it freaked her out.
Love it.
So it was like, the psychological game of it is what messed
me up. I'm with her. That still freaks me out.
Yeah.
I love it when a character turns on me.
Oh.
I mean, it freaks me out, you know.
Yeah.
But when you see someone that you think is good and then you find out they're Lorca. Right?
Lorca? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. From Discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was last season. We're not spoiling it. Shut up. But when you find out, dude, that fucked me up for a whole day. Because I liked him. He was. I was like, hey, this guy's one of the better captains from Star Trek. He was, I was kind of behind him.
It was two seasons ago, actually.
Yeah. I was like, he's, he's kind of hard ass, but like when he demands a lot, but he also seems to be trusting of the crew and when he backs them up and all this other stuff. And I'm like, oh, God damn, he's a bad guy the whole time.
Yeah. I'm going to be seeing Willow. She's almost 4. I'm going to take her to her first movie soon.
Oh, what are you saying?
Frozen 2.
Oh,
that's coming out soon.
Yeah.
So
she's seen the first one.
Yes, but she's never seen a movie in a theater. And she has sound issues when things are loud. She's like,
yeah.
So my wife has agreed to let me take her, provided that if she gets scared, I will leave right away.
Yeah. That's good.
I made the mistake with Sierra. One of her first movies, not the first, was Tangled. Mm. And we walked into the theater as we were running late for some reason.
Yo, you got to be in there before the lights went down.
Like a lightning storm was going on. And we tried to walk in and she's like, I'm like, what? Oh, no. Just get in there. Just get in there.
Yeah, it'll be kids, over. And then kids, little children, they're like the original moviegoers when they were all freaked out and thought the train was going to hit them.
Yeah.
You know, like the people hadn't seen it. And little children, the first movie I got Alex to go to was a Lego Movie 2. We saw the first one. We struggled through the first one. On
because he was scared or bored?
Scared.
Okay.
Because he was scared.
And then, so you're like, oh, let's take him to the sequel in a big theater.
Well, the reason we watched the first one is because I was like, the sequel to this movie's coming out. You want to watch the first one, right? And to this day, he still prefers the second one because he saw it in the theater. Okay. And he was able to watch the whole thing in the theater. He got it. It was long. It was a little intense, you know, but he made it through it.
I'm bribing her with popcorn and candy. I mean, she's going to get everything. First time out.
Just load her up.
Yeah, just do it. Though now I'm seeing that's why Sierra must want everything now every time we go.
Yeah.
I bribed her too to try to keep her.
Well, you know what? I did the same thing, but I shouldn't say this. I'm a renegade. I bring my own snacks. And I bribe my kid with the stuff from yeah. I learned this from my parents. They used to bring fried chicken to the movies.
Well, that's
like
good.
They'd show up with a bucket of KFC, which everybody in the theater can smell.
I sent Taco Bell in once.
Yeah,
to Braveheart.
Braveheart's a long movie. You need a meal. You're gonna have to have a meal to get through that one, and it's not gonna be haggis.
Okay. So fun episode. Let's see. A big shout out to our Patreon patrons out there.
Thank you for supporting.
Thank you to Stefan Ward, our number one supporter. And
The Ward brothers.
Just one of them.
Just the one of them. Oh, fuck the other brother.
The other one doesn't care. Stefan cares.
We have one half award.
Hey, if you want to support Black and a Half, keep this going. Please, because it's not cheap, you know, it's not free. I know you want to download stuff for free because that's the society we're in, but we're like Starbucks. You got to pay for something. So, you don't have to.
All right. Listen, folks, he's like, if you could see what I'm looking at, he's got wires and machines and there's microphones in here and he had to put all this stuff together and it takes time to do this too.
So if you want to help out with that, become a patron, go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. patreon.com/blackandahalf. Go to that and you can sign up monthly. Donate on
what
there.
Do you give them little, I know a lot of people who do Patreon have little little presents and things they send.
Well, they will get our patrons will get tickets to shows that we're on whenever we're allowed to. They're going to get tickets.
That's actually a great thing.
Pay for itself. So
Between you and Manny, you guys open some good acts too.
Yeah, so when we're allowed to. We're not always allowed to, but when we can get comps, our patrons will get that.
That's cool.
And then once we get some at the right tier level, they're going to get some secret podcast shows that no one else is going to get access to. Yeah. So
are those the naughty bits or
they might be. Another way to support the show. Hey, if you're interested in buying or selling a home, you can go to silasgetsreal.com and check out celebrity real estate agent Silas Lindenstein. Name's familiar somehow. Check him out. He'll help you out there. And of course, if you are looking to buy a home, whether you live in Seattle or not, go to our sister podcast, yourbuyingahome.com, and listen to that. It's Seattle's premier home buying podcast.
You know what? If you've never, especially if you're a first time home buyer, it's a very confusing process. And this podcast will give you a lot of really great information.
I got somebody from Knoxville.
Reassuring.
Knoxville, Tennessee. Knoxville, Tennessee. That was the
opera
show.
Fan, huh?
Louisville, Kentucky emailed me because they were from Washington listening to that podcast. They just moved there and they're looking to find an agent.
Mm.
And so they asked if I had any recommendations. And I actually know somebody in Louisville, Kentucky.
An opera singer, right?
He's an opera singer / real estate agent. Yeah. And so he went there. I can help people out all over the country with that. Anyway, and a big shout out to our listeners in Ireland.
What?
There's listeners in Ireland.
Oh, okay.
I just feel like they need a shout out.
All right.
I mean, you're listening to a show called Black and a Half and you live in Ireland.
Hey, they got Black Irish, awesome. Right? Wasn't that a phrase? That just means they have black hair.
Just black hair, yeah. Just means they're not the redhead. But, hey, thank you so much for listening. This is episode number 83, Adam Heck.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Joe, are you a big fan of the opera?
Yeah, I used to have season tickets.
Yeah?
Yeah, I had season tickets and I was a member of the Bravo Club, which is a club at the Seattle Opera for people under 40. They encourage people, younger people, to encourage younger people to go to the opera. They have this club and you get half price tickets.
For under 40?
If you're under 40.
So it was a long time ago.
It was last year, asshole. Yeah. What? Yeah, it was a long time ago. No, we got these tickets, and I have aged out. But, you know, I just date younger women and have them sign up for it.
Do you still go?
I don't have tickets right now, but I am thinking about going. The Marriage of Figaro, I believe, is coming up this season, and that's one of my favorites. So I'll probably go to that. I might go to that. They, you know, the opera's weird because they only do like five or six run shows in a season, right? And each one runs for a while.
Typical, right?
Yeah. But the thing is that lately, right, because there's a new opera director at the Seattle Opera, right, and they're trying some new things. Like, they recently had an opera about Steve Jobs, right?
Really?
Yeah, huh. Which was kind of weird.
Was it in Italian?
I think it was in English, right? And I'm like, what's going on in this opera? Like, it's, you know, we need to make it smaller. We need to have a faster upload speed. Like, what's, you know, what are they singing about in this opera? But
I've got pancreatic cancer.
Right. That's a sad, like, the sad minor key ending. Right. I'm not going to meet the children in China who make my bones. You know what? I don't know.
We'll make this product break in a year and have to buy a new one.
So is it real? This is real?
That really happened.
It really did a Steve Jobs.
Yes, and it kind of flopped. And I think for a couple of reasons. One, because you can't really make an opera about this. And then also, this is not a Steve Jobs town. This is a Microsoft town.
Right.
Right. So everybody here is not like, oh, Steve Jobs, you know, like.
He's an icon, I think, in the tech.
He's an icon nationwide. But in this town, we have a loyalty to Microsoft. And that's
support your local monopoly.
Yeah, right. You know, it'd be like if we're in Pepsi Town and they decide to do an opera about Coca-Cola, right? It's just
that makes sense.
It's like everybody likes soda, and some people still like Coke better than Pepsi. But when you're in Pepsi Town, you make a Pepsi opera.
It seems bizarre. Who? Okay, so I brought Miss Saigon. Is there an opera version of it?
Madame Butterfly. It's the same thing.
Oh, Madame Butterfly. Yeah, that's what right. It was.
I think that's a Puccini opera.
Have you heard about the Tennessee? The reason I brought up the opera was, did you hear about Tennessee's situation?
No, what's going on in Tennessee?
They're doing a production in Tennessee, Knoxville, Tennessee.
This can only go better. Everybody knows that Knoxville, Tennessee's got the opera scene.
Well, they have a well-known, I guess, opera house. They're doing Madame Butterfly. There is nobody that is Asian in the musical. They have everyone. They've used makeup.
Oh, no. Did they yellow face
them? They yellow face the entire most of the cast.
Oh, my God.
And they are getting hounded on Facebook.
Of course.
I guess they've done other productions. Apparently they're not a very sensitive group.
No, you know, in Seattle's I think people in our town should be really proud of our opera, because it is first of all, just in the last like couple of decades, we went from being, from what I understand, kind of a backwoods opera place to a pretty big spot on the map in the world of opera. But our opera is really progressive. Like, they hire black singers, you know, which is something.
Progressive.
Look, we're talking about music.
And black people?
No. Like, we're talking about music that's you know,
traditionally
old,
Italian,
old, racist. Right. It's misogynist, right? And they're doing these little things. You know, they're adding diversity to the cast, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then also, when they have like problematic issues that show up in the opera, they actually have things like out in the lobby that say, "Hey, look, this was written in 1690. It's not the most progressive piece of art you're going to see.
Right.
We are doing things to the opera to sort of make it more progressive, but you can only mess with this stuff so much before you compromise the integrity of the original piece of art. You know, because it's like you can't go to the opera, like can't go changing all the words and everything. You know, it's like it's it was written this way and it's what it is. And it's the story is about, you know, because a lot of these operas, it's the story is like, you know, here's a woman. She's so stupid. She can't make up her mind. And then she's got all these men to choose from. And then, you know, some man swindles her and takes her, you know, her honor or whatever. And then she kills herself. That's like how half of them go, you know. And I think they're trying hard to find ways to put spins on it so that it takes some of the bite out of that, some of the misogyny, and especially there's a lot of misogyny in opera.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, a lot of Shakespeare, a lot of the classics.
The classics.
The classics.
It's the classic bigotry. Right.
Right.
What I just find funny, I just don't understand the strong desire of a town, of a theater company that says, oh, hey, here's a play that I love, or music, opera, whatever. Oh, I love. But maybe we shouldn't do it.
Right.
Since we don't have anyone. Like, okay, so you're a writer.
Yeah.
Adam, right? Right. So you're writing a sketch.
Right.
And if you suddenly thought, you know what, this would be good with black people in it. Do you think, like, well, I don't know any black people, so I'm just not going to write it. Or you're like, you know what, I can make someone black. Like, what do you...
Right.
How do you approach writing? Like, do you think in that terms when you're writing it? Does it
usually when I write a sketch, I'm just pretty open as far as anyone can play this role, really. If we are writing a sketch that would involve a black person, I make sure that we have a black person for the sketch.
Okay.
And I think that's just being intelligent, really. I
mean, that doesn't seem like a hard concept.
Why cause controversy if you don't need to? You know?
A few years ago, there was a theater that. It was directed by a black guy too, but it was a play about MLK, and he cast a white actor.
Oh yeah,
he cast. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
he cast. I know I'm not Manny Martin. I'm a little bit a few shades lighter, but he cast a white guy to play
MLK. Martin.
Did he add an eye in the middle and just make it milk? Is that what happened?
No, but it was a black director, and that's the only reason I think it got as far as it did. But the playwright ended up shutting it down when they heard about it because they're like, no, that's not my intent. So there was a discussion on, this was a while ago. The only reason I found that was because I was searching for something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is the last time I spoke in the theater group was when they were the MLK thing. It just cracks me up who... People go, oh, I got a great take on it. Oh no, that was that's weird. Actually, that was a Facebook memory I saw today.
Yeah,
was about that, and it was yesterday that the Madam Butterfly thing came up. So I was like, oh, it's that time of year.
Yeah,
it's racism season.
Yeah, right.
Right before Thanksgiving.
That's right. You know, yeah.
Get ready for the holiday.
That's right.
Well, you know, you got to warm people up before the racist uncle comes over.
I know, right?
You
know,
you got to get them ready. Kind of get your arguments ready, you know.
Right, right.
This is why it's okay. I just, you know, it's funny. Like, sometimes people bend over backwards to try to justify stuff, you know. And I'm a white guy from a white family, and I've heard it. My family's, you know, we're pretty progressive, I think, as far as that goes. But, you know, every now and then people got that racist uncle who comes over and they've been reading, you know, the Fox News spreadsheet.
Yeah,
right.
And they've got all their talking points ready to go, you know, about why it's okay or how you can justify it. And
so many people want to make a point. Right.
Yeah.
Like they're like, I'm gonna switch it up.
Reverse racism and all this other stuff, and it's just like, hey, why do you gotta, you know?
Well, I don't think the black director was thinking reverse racism. He just thought it would be interesting and like, oh, maybe it'll bring a second level to this.
You know, right. I think sometimes challenging ideas is important, and it is important to, I think, to challenge ideas. But when you're doing something like this and you're gonna present it to an audience, you should really have figured out how the challenge is gonna be perceived. Like you. You know, it's kind of like we do in comedy. Like, you run a bit in an open mic, and if the audience pulls way back, you know that bit's not working, right?
Yeah.
And you got to get in there and work it and reword it. Because if you're trying to toe in a line and you know, you got a real sensitive subject you're working on, you can't just like, you know, just go out and just run your special on this thing. You gotta work it out and kind of rub the edges out and figure out where it goes.
20 or so years ago, there was a production of Othello that Sir Patrick Stewart, played Othello.
Right.
The whole cast, the rest of the cast was black, though.
Oh, now see, I kind of like that.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, that's a big point.
Right. But that's I think a little bit more what I'm talking about, where you flip the script literally in this way, and then you have this sort of a, you know, an inverse imagery, and I think what's powerful about that is that when you do something like that, it forces white people to see the opposite perspective, right?
Yeah.
So it makes it so that they have to kind of acknowledge where. You know,
I thought it was neat because
otherness, when the white person is othered, that's right. When you have like that.
Most white people don't get to experience doing Othello, right? Like playing Othello, and most black people can't do. Therefore, they can't do the other roles, right? Unless it's a monologue, because it doesn't make sense if anyone else is a Moor,
in the
play, except for him, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's fascinating. I like the. I like role complete reversals. They're, did you guys see that movie White Man's Burden?
John Travolta. Yeah.
I don't think I saw that.
I like the premise of it. So it was basically that there was a black majority, and it was a complete role reversal of the race.
Right. Yeah.
So there's black cops harassing white people, and
sure.
And then, of course, there's always these the dumb parts of these is where they try to make everyone seem like everyone's similar. You know, when you get down to it. And so White Travolta, you know, was teaching the black white poor Travolta was teaching the rich black guy how, like, when you dip your French fries in the ketchup, you know, if you put the salt in the ketchup, then, you know, like you can control how much salt you're getting. Like, and it was like, wow, he really educated this rich guy, you know, like. And, you know, like, so, well, it doesn't come down to, you know, color or anything. It's all about, look, this is where we can meet them. I have something, I can learn something from this white guy.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like he went into, like, you know, like the black guy goes into a white neighborhood and then suddenly he's learning to play bridge or something. Like, you know.
That's similar.
He's like, I'm going to play you this really hip music. And he puts on, like, Perry Como or something.
Let me get your badminton racket. Yeah.
I think it was, wait. No, it was. I want to say that rap was the predominant music. Like, it was like, so everything was Afrocentric.
Right. And instead, then they're like, I want to show you this real hip white stuff, Mozart.
That might have been. They might have had that. Yeah. I got to watch it again. It was kind of. There's a lot of movies like that I feel like have a good premise.
Yeah. But
they just don't know how to. They just didn't know how to do it.
True.
But they got it out before.
And they all star John Travolta.
Yeah.
Right.
He's like the guy in all those movies. It's like, you know, like Face Off had a great premise, right?
Yeah.
And Nick Cage carried that movie, and John Travolta was, I thought, an anchor on that whole thing. Because Nick Cage was just going over the top.
Broken Arrow.
Yeah.
You want to see that?
Yeah.
Broken Arrow, the nuclear.
That's a John Woo movie.
Yeah.
It's a John Travolta movie, too.
Yep. Yeah, but that's why it's the worst John Woo movie ever made. Because Travolta was in it. Even Christian Slater is like halfway through the movie. He's like, I can't believe I'm doing this shit with this guy. This movie was so good before Travolta showed up.
You know what? It was like Pulp Fiction happened, right? And
yeah.
Was like, Travolta's back. This is amazing. And then they started just putting him in everything.
Yeah.
He was just then in everything.
When I saw him in Michael, I was like, that's the end of movies.
Right.
And they get that. And they got that Clapton song. If I could change. And I'm like, oh no, what's going on here? Like, this is the worst cinema that's ever gonna happen. But, you know, Travolta.
But had he not had his comeback, we wouldn't have got Battlefield Earth.
Did you hear about his recent one, the Fanatic? What? The Fanatic, directed by Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit.
What?
Yeah.
What is this?
Fred Durst directed a movie. Yeah, it's some movie from Fred Durst, and he basically plays this like crazy Hollywood fanatic. Like, he's obsessed with this Hollywood star. But
Travolta
is? Yeah, but he's playing autistic, and it's just terrible.
He's playing autistic purposely?
Yeah. Yeah,
Is it out yet?
I think it is. I think
that has come and gone, my friend.
I think it has come and gone.
Is it on video?
It might be. But I was just hearing a review about it, and I'm like,
if we're lucky? Yeah, I mean, that didn't even get out of much press if I didn't even hear about it.
Yeah.
Travolta should be in a... I feel like he should be in a Marvel movie or a DC movie, though, right? Somebody should be getting...
I don't think so.
No?
I think he will ruin it. You know what? Okay, I'll tell you what the problem is with an actor.
Even Christian Slater's been in a Star Trek movie.
That's true.
That's right. He was Sulu's. Right. He came Sulu's right-hand man. Woke up Sulu.
Woke up.
That's right.
Will Scarlet is here to wake him up.
Will Scarlet.
No, I think the problem with Travolta and actors like Travolta is that when you see him, he's always Travolta. He's not enough of a chameleon. You can't escape his own ness. You know,
that's most actors, though, right?
No, I don't think so.
Like a role, they want you in that. Tom Cruise, right?
Yeah, totally.
Tom Cruise, you watch
for mostly.
Yeah, but you watch Tom Cruise to be Tom Cruise. You don't necessarily. Yeah, when
you watch Travolta to be Travolta.
Yeah, who does? Somebody in Tennessee who really likes that opera is like, this John Travolta guy is just great. I just love this Travolta. I could watch him eat a ham sandwich, and then you probably do.
Yeah. He's good at a ham sandwich.
No, there's actors out there that are, you know, I think
there's chameleons for sure. I mean, right. Tom Hanks, man.
Oh, yeah.
He changes. I was just thinking today, I actually made a post on Facebook today about what all my dream roles would be if I were an actor. And one person that kept coming up in my head because of all these movies, and he's in all these movies, is Hugo Weaving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He is in everything, and he's always different. He's Agent Smith.
Yep.
He's Elrond.
Oh, yeah, he's,
you know, he's got good. That deep voice, but he also, like, he was also the guy in V for Vendetta.
So who's
the mask? Yeah, yeah. It was him.
So which actor is your actor? Like, you will go see them in anything they do.
Oh, I got a few, but, like, you know, like, he's one of those ones where I get excited when I see he's, like, in a movie because I know it's going to be good. Now that you're putting me on the spot, I'm like, I'm having trouble thinking.
Adam, do you have one?
Willem Dafoe.
Dafoe? Okay.
Yeah, he's excellent. Yeah.
I think for me, it's Will Smith.
Will Smith?
I will go see Will Smith in anything. Like, not that I think he's a great actor, but he's had these moments like Pursuit of Happiness and stuff that was like.
When Will Smith cries, I cry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
I saw Gemini Man, and I thought he did a really good job acting.
That was a fabulous 90s movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, actually, you're right. Like, that's
very nice.
That movie, if it came out in the 90s, would have just smashed.
Ooh,
it would have just smashed.
Him and Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger would like, oh, I wanted that.
I needed that movie. How come that's not me and me? Yeah, he went. Well, Schwarzenegger kind of did that movie. He did the movie where he gets cloned.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The seventh day, the sixth day, the seventh day.
That's right.
Oh, right. That's right.
He did a movie where he was cloned. And he did it in, was it in the 90s? I think it was just after the 90s.
I think so.
I think
just after the 90s.
I think that was
the
last, I think now that I'm thinking, I think that might have been the last movie he made before he was governor.
Oh.
Might have been.
I think that was the last thing he did, and then he became the governor.
That seems familiar.
I'm so glad he's back. I'm glad he's back. I haven't seen the new Terminator. What I love about the Terminator movies is that they are all terrible.
Right,
every one of them is terrible, and I love them.
Shut up.
No, they're
Terminator 2. Is really
T2
good.
Is the best one, I agree.
It's
but
really good.
Even now, go back and watch it. It's still,
I did. I saw it at Cinerama.
It's
like,
still kind of a terrible movie.
Ago.
It's still a little terrible.
It's not, though.
It's a good movie.
It holds up.
It's the better of them. But the Terminator movies and also the Alien and Predator movies, those franchises, they are like, and it's always the second one. The second Aliens is really good.
Yep.
You know, well, the first Predator is, I think, still the best one, which was the one with Arnold. But Predator 2 was tight. Danny Glover,
that was
dude,
good,
he was good in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, but then all of the Predator, Alien, and Alien versus Predator movies are terrible, and I will watch them over and over again. I love even the worst of them. I love the worst Terminators. I love Terminator 3 was just the worst one, and I like it. I'll watch it right now. Put it on. Put it on. I will watch it.
Is that the one where they got closed up in the mountain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're gonna.
He's like, I'm back. I'm the newer, older model. I'm older, but I'm newer, but I'm older.
This it's a great. I saw Terminator. It's wonderful. I think it's really good. It's really good.
The new one?
Yeah, and I.
Don't ruin it.
No, but my biggest thing was the age. Just, I mean, we can see in the.
Yeah.
Previews,
yeah.
Like, right. But he's old.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Like,
yeah. I'm the newer, older model. Right. I'm newer, but I'm older. But
I've been
newer.
Here a while.
But they explain it. They make it make sense.
Okay. You can get away with just about anything if you've got good writing.
And what I like is that they, you know, they don't focus on it. They don't like, it's not a recurring joke or like, oh, about, oh, yeah, the age. They're just like, oh, this is what happened. And they all go, All right. Yeah. Well. All right. So. We're all there. We're all here. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll all move on.
Yeah. There's no like.
There may be a plot hole if we think about this too long. So let's just keep going. Let's just keep going.
There's no joke in there like, you know, what's the matter, Arnie? Your joints getting rusty or anything like that.
Shut up. We need to.
Robot arthritis. More,
you know, the problem with MSK 3000.
MSK?
Right? MSK 2000?
What are you talking about?
Mystery Science Theater?
Mystery Science Theater.
MSK?
Yeah. MST?
MSK?
MST. Oh, theater. Why did I thought it was MSK?
I don't know.
Mystery Science Kitchen. I don't know. Maybe there is that. Maybe that is a magic sauce kitchen. Okay. They do it to all the bad movies, but I kind of want to do that to good movies now.
Oh, I know, right?
Like, just rip them apart.
Right.
Or just shred them. Make
fun Finding of them. The bad and the good.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Can you imagine them doing that with, like, Sophie's Choice? Like, which one's she going to choose? Who's she choosing? No spoiler. She has to choose one.
So new things out. Did either of you see The Mandalorian?
Yep. No, I'm taking the day off of everything tomorrow.
It's only one. There's only one episode.
I know. I'm signing up for the Disney Plus, right? And then tonight.
That takes a minute.
I'm going to do it tonight.
Yeah.
Then tomorrow, after I drop my kid off, I have to take my car to the shop.
Okay.
They're going to have it all day. They get a courtesy shuttle and it takes me back home. And then I'm going to stay there. And I'm going to dive into Disney
Mandalorian,
Plus.
Watch the Apple Dumpling Gang, right?
I love that. Give me some Don Knotts.
Right?
Andy! they also have the thing that I'm also really excited about is they're going to have, as part of the next phase of Marvel, they have the story of Vision and
WandaVision
and they settle down in the suburbs. But here's what's wild, okay? It's a sitcom. They modeled the show on Father Knows Best,
mm-hmm.
right?
They said it's going to be surprising and funny, and it's not on yet.
It's not going to be on for a little bit. It's not the first thing they're rolling out with the Mandalorian. They're kind of teasing this now, and it's going to come in a little bit later. But this is where I think it gets a little nuts, which is what I'm really excited about, is that they're doing this and they're doing it as a sitcom. Like as a weekly, you know, like a Father Knows Best type show. But what it leads into, right, the next thing that comes after it is Doctor Strange, which is going to be the first Marvel Cinematic horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're going to transition from sitcom, right, which is like this family-friendly kind of light and fluffy show with these little morals and stuff.
Right.
And then go right into horror.
Right.
But it's not. It's a different. It's TV, and one's TV. And one's
right.
Not.
But yep. I'm saying, like, a lot of times, I don't have to tell you how nerds get. People like to watch this stuff in a row, right?
Yeah.
So people who want to watch things chronologically are going to be sitting there watching this kind of, you know, what we think of now as a hokey format,
right?
Who knows what they're going to do with it? It could be really cool. I think it's going to be really cool. But then, But then they're going to go from like a situational comedy into a horror. Just for me, as somebody who kind of studied genre in college, this is a real hard turn. And then doing it through the vehicle of Marvel, you know, people, that's really bold.
I hope they do that with Star Wars. I was hoping that what they would do with all the non-story Star Wars, like when they said they were going to do it like till infinity, you know? I wanted the, like, because, like, Rogue One was, like, this military heist. It was a Tom Clancy type of movie.
Yeah,
right.
Then we had a bank heist movie with Solo.
Solo.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to keep doing that. Different kind of.
Then
do a horror. Then do a buddy, let's do a buddy cop show.
Buddy cop would be great.
Totally, yeah.
We could bring the Ewoks out and just do, like, just do another Father Knows Best with Ewoks.
With Ewoks. I've said Star Trek that my dream, I'm hoping Mandalorian, a type of thing like this, where it's not like it doesn't appear to be a lightsaber thing. I want like a dynasty set on Romulus.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Oh,
I want to see just a show that's in the Star Trek universe, takes place on Romulus, and we hear about the higher powers and that they all fight with and their turmoil. I feel like they would be good with like upper echelon
Yeah, Dynasty totally. What was the one where the JR was dead?
Dallas.
Yeah.
Dallas dealt with common folks, though. I just want rich Romulans. Right. And what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
The military. And like, I just think that would be a real fun thing. Like, if I did a fan film, that's what I would write.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. That'd be there's a lot of buzz going around right now because you have two, I think. I haven't seen, we haven't seen the second one, but Discovery. I love Discovery. I think it's a different type of Star Trek, something we really haven't seen before. I love what they've been doing where they have an arc that goes across a whole season. It's not episodic the way Star Trek is traditionally.
Right.
They do have kind of episodic things that happen, but the story arc is very important in this, right? And then you have the new Picard show, and the new Picard one looks like it's kind of like a post-Federation world. It's almost like apocalyptic in this way.
Mm-hmm. What?
It looks like it happens after. Yeah, it kind of looks like the Federation has dissolved quite a bit.
No, that's in Discovery.
No. In Picard.
Picard doesn't look that way.
Yeah, it does,
Dog. No, he's okay. From what I've seen, they're just working outside of the Federation, outside of Starfleet. Starfleet's there.
It looks like it's there, but it's kind of like Rome in the latter years of Rome, where it is definitely not the Federation that it used to be. Things are kind of...
In 20 years, I don't think that's going to happen.
Hey, look, dude, I'm telling you what I've seen, and I'm telling you what I'm seeing.
He's just not going through Starfleet. I just think it doesn't take place within Starfleet.
Let's just assume for just a moment that what I'm saying is true, and that the Federation
is... mixing, because the Discovery is definitely... in the future, like 900 years, and Federation has been pretty much dismantled.
The new Discovery, because they've moved to another thing. Yeah. Yeah, okay, but that's the thing, is that like it's looking like what's happening in that Discovery part is starting in Picard. Hmm. That the Federation is coming unwound. It's like it's coming undone, and they're losing their grip.
I think we're going to mark this episode.
All right, fine. We can come back to this.
Completely wrong.
All right, fine. But here's I mean, it wouldn't be the first time you've been wrong. Here's where it gets exciting, though. There is a very strong potential, especially with the time jumping, that Discovery and Picard could cross over.
Well,
Picard could actually end up on the Discovery or finding Discovery. Did you see, by the way, with the Discovery... the little Discovery shorts?
I have not watched those yet. Have you watched those?
I haven't seen
them. They're really cool, and there's one.
Do I need all access for that?
I don't know. Maybe.
Because I my credit card expired, and I didn't know.
I'm not going to tell you how I saw.
Was over.
Right.
But the little shorts are really cool, but one of them in particular is super cool, right? Because it's way in the future. Like, it kind of implies almost post-humanity future. Like, it's way... Mm. And the ship is sitting in the middle of nowhere, right? And this story is...
Well, can we stop? I want to see it.
Okay, fine.
It's a short. There's no way... You can't not ruin a short.
Okay, fine. I won't tell you. But there's a lot of the shorts kind of have to do with the crew and whatnot, what's going on now. But there's one in particular that takes place that's definitely outside of the timeline, and it's way in the future, and it is cool. It is.
How many are there?
So,
like four?
I think it's four of them. But this one in particular, you'll know when you see it. It's different, and they take it into a whole other headspace. It's really cool. Love it. I love what they did with that. But that's what's great. See, Star Trek before was just like, it's like the swagger of the captain, and then they, in the original series, right? And you had like the crew, and then they kind of reinvented that with a more distinguished captain, a more distinguished crew, but still some of the similar elements, right?
Yep.
And then they did DS9, which was Star Trek, but kind of more static because they're on a space station.
Yeah.
But it's still the crew, and it's still episodic. And then they went back to a crew with Voyager and Enterprise, and they're kind of redoing the same formula over and over again. And they did the movies, and then Star Trek just fell off.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back with like Discovery, Picard, all these little offshoots, and they're taking this world into all these other narrative directions. I think it's fantastic, and it's all because it's good writing. They've got good writers.
Streaming has enabled
a
lot
certainly.
That they couldn't do before.
Well, TV has gotten so much better with that.
But so
yeah, totally.
But basically, I would say anybody should check out Mandalorian. The different feel to Star Wars.
Well, don't you go screwing it
no,
up.
No, I'm not. But from the trailer, I mean, it's definitely, it hinted at a Western feel, and it definitely feels cool. Like, I tried to tell someone, like, you liked Firefly, you should watch this, because, nice. You know, Firefly.
Well,
was
it's
that,
about
it's
bounty
hunters,
old West,
right?
Isn't like,
right?
Is it Boba Fett? It's kind of, not Boba Fett, but like similar.
Mandalorian is.
What Boba Fett is?
Yeah.
He mm-hmm. Boba Fett is a Mandalorian, but a Mandalorian isn't necessarily Boba Fett.
Right. Yes. Yeah. The Mandalorians, there's books about the Mandalorians. That
they're
just
like a class of
kind
people.
Kind of like a, yeah, I think they're all from one planet, but they're all like, it's like a planet of bounty hunters.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure isn't true, because I know other things they've said, like, said that for, like, oh yeah, this is a race of, like, the race of Klingons.
Right.
Right.
No, but there are lawyers, right? There are other
Worf's
people.
Granddad was a lawyer.
Yeah. There's cooks,
in Star Trek
right?
VI.
Yeah.
And he was played by Worf.
There's chefs. Yeah. Not everybody is a warrior.
Well, that's what I always wondered is, like, wouldn't, like, you were talking about what kind of other show? Wouldn't it be fun to have, like, you know, like a sitcom on Kronos, right? A Kronos sitcom.
Sounds like The Honeymooners.
Yeah, you know,
two
like,
of them
comes home. He's like, you know, he's like there's, you know, I didn't get my egg shipment today, and he's all pissed off or whatever.
That would actually be a great sketch. Do like a Klingon Honeymooners,
right?
What did you see? They did a mashup on when Patrick Stewart was the guest on the host on Saturday Night Live. They did a mashup of Star Trek and Love Boat. Have you ever seen that? The Love Boat.
I did.
The
I
Love Boat
did.
Enterprise.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Geordi's mixing the cocktails, and Worf is like supposed to take people to their. To their escort them to their rooms.
Oh, did you guys read the thing about The Office? Like what his he
wanted to do Cheers.
Yeah, just as like maybe just a one time show, get the cast together and do they all just play the actors in Cheers. I think that would be a fun.
That's awesome.
Way of seeing the cast together, but just doing something else.
Yeah. Well, I like this idea. You know, the problem though is that with that idea, this is what's kind of bugging me is I like that they're doing Mandalorian and that they're coming up with these new shows, and I like that they're taking old things that we know like Star Trek and they're kind of retooling them into new shows that we can get into. But what really makes me crazy is that you had in the 1980s and 90s like this, like especially the 80s, you had this content coming out that was just completely like really original stuff. That's so Terminator. Yeah. In my opinion, is the 80s was the best decade for movies, right?
Right.
Like there was a lot of great stuff. Mm-hmm. But then after like it toward the end of the 80s and then going into the 90s, it became sequels, right? There were all these sequels that are coming out. It was like, why don't we just take what we did that worked and just make a second one?
Yeah.
Right. And then they started then what they started doing, which because people were getting sequels and they were getting sick of sequel sickness, right? They started deconstruction. Which is where we got Unforgiven, right? Where they took the genre and they broke it down and they kind of inverted things and showed things in a more, you know, gritty, they sort of broke them apart. But then they started doing remakes.
Yeah,
right.
And prequels.
And they're like, we're gonna just remake the things. And it's like, oh God, you know. But now because of the way things are going with streaming and the way TV as a format has changed, it has forced the industry. Because of the new format and the way and the competitiveness for content, it has forced the industry to start writing new stuff.
Well, to a degree, but Matt Damon was talking about his new film, Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah.
They were saying...
That looks fun.
So this is a film, though, that can have no sequel. It's not...
Right.
It's a standalone film. They said it's really hard now for the movie studios to greenlight something that has no...
No franchise potential.
No franchise potential. Because they said the DVD market is almost dead now.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
of streaming. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it's true.
It used to be that they could do these films and then, oh, if it does well, get some awards maybe, then they can do really well on the DVD market. That market's gone now.
Yeah.
So they're it's a reason that they are banking more on these, like, let's make an entire universe. Let's do this universe because then everyone will collect them.
You know, it has occurred to me this week that we are actually, because things are moving very, very quickly, I think we're actually going to see yet another turn to the industry because Disney Plus is going to fuck everybody up. Because if you look at the way these companies, these media companies are set up, okay, so Netflix and HBO were kind of going head to head for who could buy out all this content, right? Who could get the goody goods of the content? And then Disney was like, you know what? We have this catalog that is just insane. Yeah. Fuck right. you guys. We're going to do our own thing. Now, AOL Time Warner is going to come out, and they're going to be like, they're going to pull
Apple
all of
Apple TV has their own.
Yeah, yeah.
Apple's not.
Which looks interesting. Actually, they have a show that looks
Apple
really
does
good.
Not have the content, though, because.
Well, neither did Netflix, and now they do.
Yeah, but they're, that's what
but
I'm
Apple
saying.
Apple TV's new. Netflix. Have you seen the show? Steve Carell, he's in it, and Rachel from Friends, whatever her name is.
Yeah, but this is, oh, what yeah, I, yeah. this is what I'm getting at. Yeah. I think Netflix and HBO and now Apple TV are all going to, they're all going to hit a brick wall because they're.
Hulu.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all going to have problems because Disney pulled all their content. Time Warner is going to pull all of their content. All of these big old companies, Paramount, is going to pull all of their content, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And they're just going to, because the Paramount catalog is immense. It's immense. These companies have immense catalogs that go all the way back to Humphrey Bogart and everything. They're right. going to do, they're going to pull all that stuff out and they're just going to sell their own catalog. I kind of had this idea a long time ago. Like, I asked a friend of mine, how much would you pay if you could get a little, you know, a box or whatever, a unit in your home that literally just had everything ever made on it?
Yeah. Right.
Like, how much would you pay for that? $1,000? It'd be worth at least a grand. Like, if you could pay $1,000 right now and just have everything ever made in a box, it would be worth more.
I don't know if people would. You know, because, like...
Add up how much you're paying for the streaming services, right, and it would be like 2 years worth of streaming service.
Yeah, but I am a legitimate person. I buy everything, right? Gary Goldman has a joke about that, about how the creation of the iPod. And they're like, oh, I want something. I want to put I want this thing, and I want to put my put music on it. They're like, oh, you want to put your music on it? Oh, no, I mean the music. I want all the music on this. And how much will you pay for it?
Right.
Nothing. Okay. That's what they want. Nobody wants to pay for anything now.
Right.
So, well, like, you can steal everything now, too.
Yeah.
But you know what's crazy is with these streaming services and whatnot, is we're kind of limited to the library that's on there. So whenever it comes up, like, this has actually recently happened to me. Somebody mentioned great Seattle movie, The Fabulous Baker Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's a movie.
Oh, Bridges. Is it a Seattle movie?
It's a movie about these Bridges brothers movies, that basically do.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was Seattle.
Yeah, it's in Seattle. And it highlights a lot of what Seattle, like, you kind of. Seattle's part of the movie.
A lot of passive aggressiveness in it.
I think it was before that time.
Seattle freeze.
I think it was. Yeah. I think it was before that.
Did
came
they
in.
Complain about Californians the whole movie?
Yeah, they're like, who's buying up all
wasn't
this
for
property?
Californians.
They had a vibe. It was a Seattle vibe, and it was in the movie. And it was, and somebody was mentioning it as a sort of almost like a snapshot of what Seattle was like at a certain time. And I was like, you know what? That was a good movie. I should go back and watch that. Couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it. I'm like, oh, you know what? I could do. It's like, yeah. It's like, well, yeah. I could probably just go rent this at a video store. Where are they?
Amazon, $3.99.
Still got Scarecrow video.
I rent a lot. Actually, I do rent a lot from Amazon now because I'm like, I wanted to watch show my daughter this movie. Where is it? It's on Amazon. Let's just do that.
Yeah.
What's pissed me off is when I don't check every other service. And I rented on Amazon, and then I'm like,
oh,
damn it, it's on Hulu.
Right.
All right. Got that through somebody. But Adam, okay, since you've been here. And
right.
What, you actually have a show coming up, right?
Yes.
So you are the artistic director for Turbo Turkey?
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Got it? Turbo Turkey Productions? Or
yeah, Turbo Turkey Productions.
Does that do everything that you do?
Does
everything fall under that?
Yeah, we started off in about 2009. We just started doing improv. I took some Jet City classes and stuff like that. And then from there, we started doing sketch comedy and improv. And then a couple years ago, I had a sketch with a superhero called Electric Man. And from there, it was like, we kept doing the sketch. I'm like, oh, it just feels like there's more to the story. So then we wrote a play about it. And then from there, it's kind of just gradually turned into this whole almost Marvel type universe, but with theater. So, that's kind of how that kind of came about. Originally.
So, like, wait, you have multiple superheroes?
Oh yeah,
in different plays that you've been doing around Seattle.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy crap!
How did you miss
wait,
this?
Did you do one at? Did you do one recent, like a year ago at Ballad Underground?
We haven't actually done one at Ballad Underground.
Okay.
Yeah, there was one there. I remember
some sort of superhero.
Yeah. We did Electric Man twice. We did it once at Burien Actors Theater.
Okay.
And then we did it at Eclectic before they went out of business. And then from there, we've done a couple other ones. From there, Fiona Lelio, which is a female superhero. We did that at the Pocket. And then we did another one called Panoramic after that. And this upcoming play is called The Safeguard Society. It's kind of our take on the Avengers Justice League type thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So
do you have the same actors? Do they stay for
some? Some of them come back. Some of them aren't able. So we just recast where we need
okay.
to.
Okay.
Have you guys taken these characters and like and actually made like any comics or graphic novels out of them? Like
I've written a few stories. I
would think
you could barely draw stick figures myself. So
well, see, because you know,
find an artist.
I had an idea, and I was like, I went up to Artist Alley at Comic Con,
mm-hmm.
and I started kind of shopping this idea around. And there was a couple people that kind of listened to me, and this one guy was like, you know, you have some stuff here, but really, what you need is a whole. You need a story that you can show people.
Mm-hmm.
He was just telling me it's not enough. Like what you have is right. not enough. But if you showed, you could probably take this to the Artist Alley at Comic-Con
cool.
and shop it around. I bet you could probably find artists because there's a bunch of artists
yeah.
that are really, really talented. You know, artists that either don't have a project they're working on or they were working. You know, there's people who are between things and there's. You know, they can't come up with every idea on their own. A lot of times people need to collaborate. I would imagine you could probably get something going like that, too.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Give each action an action figure for everybody who plays that role.
That'd be cool. Right? Right?
Do they fly? Do any of them fly?
Not really, only just because of the logistics.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. Yeah. I was like, how do you make them fly? Right. I want to know if you do.
Wait, we do have a speedster. So what we do is we just kind of have everyone else slow down and then run fast.
Yeah.
So we just kind of, with theater, you just kind of be as creative as you can in terms of, you know, being able to.
So is this come from, did you always have a superhero passion or anything? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I grew up, you know, reading Spider-Man and X-Men and stuff like that and Batman.
DC or Marvel?
More Marvel, most likely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I've gotten more into DC as the years have gone on. Well, see, the Electric Man originally came from my dad. He worked overnights at the post office, and he used to always do these elaborate, silly costumes and stuff for Halloween.
Oh, I was like, and just so, at the post office?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. Who would have thought? Yeah. And one year he came up, he had this little. You know, mini tape recorder named Electric Man, and he had this whole thing with, you know, and he had all of us kind of appear on it too, and it was like an intro. He had an intro for it, which was like, "Who's that lurking in the bushes? Is it a cat? Is it a pervert? No, it's Electric Man." And that's something we actually kept in the play.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so you know, as I grew up and all that, and I started doing sketch and improv and things like that, I'm like, I should bring this character back and maybe flesh it out a little bit more and give him more of a story. And so from there, it's kind of. Evolved, and then I've said, well, I need more characters, and then what if I did this character, what if I did, and then more characters popped in my head, and just, you know, I always keep a notebook with me at work, just to like if I get something comes up and I'm I better write that down, because if you don't write it down it goes out of your head and you forget it, you know.
I know that from comedy for sure. Yep. What brought you to this, like were you a writer like in high school?
A little bit. I did a little bit of creative writing in high school and college. And then I have a theater degree as well. So it just kind of meshed together pretty well. And my dad did a lot of writing too. So I think I just come by it honest and stuff. But I just always really liked writing and stuff like that. You know, started writing sketches and then started finding sketches. I'm like, well, this might have a little bit more to it than just being a one-off sketch. It may have more of a story. And so
that's what I love about these. It's just, you know, it's with all of the superhero movies, it doesn't matter if the guy flies or what his power is. It's the story behind it. What's the I don't even want to say human aspect, but the humanity.
Right. Right. Know? Yeah. And I think that what's great about this show that we wrote too, is that like every superhero here and even some of the villains, yeah, everyone's got some trauma they're dealing with, you know. It's like I said, it's very lighthearted. There's a lot of comedy in it, but there's still everyone's coming into it with like they've been through some stuff and they can. And I think everybody can relate to being through things that have happened to them, whether it's loss or just whatnot. But there's, at the same time, there's a lot of fun fights. My wife actually does fight choreography and stuff like that. So she did that for the show. She's also in it. So it's what's great about it. There's just a lot of everything. It's what superhero thing should be. It's just, it should be fun, but also be relatable.
Right. Is what has been, what's been the biggest challenge for you doing these, this series?
Try not to make them so that they all come off too repetitive in terms of their story and in terms of their character. So it doesn't seem like, hey, this is the exact same story, but this character. And really just trying to garner interest too. Like, I mean, there's definitely people who are interested in it, but then you have the, what I've learned too is like, you'll email people on Facebook and like, yeah, that sounds really cool. And then they don't come to the show. And yeah. It's just like, oh, thanks.
That's true with all the live arts. And I think it goes back to, you know, what we were just talking about in the streaming, that there's just so much content, things that you can watch that it's really hard to get to people to go out to a live show. I think right now with like the Disney Plus just debuting, it's hard to get the performers themselves out to the shows.
Exactly.
Well, I was telling someone today, because they were actually saying they hate Disney. They hate Disney Plus. Mm. And they're like, it's awful. They think that Disney has ruined theater or films.
Right.
And I was saying, I think if we look back, to some degree, Disney may have saved movie theaters because theater attendance was dropping. Like going to movie theaters, people were starting to stay home because they did have Netflix now as an option, or the ticket prices were so much. Mm. And what they've done with Marvel is made so many nights a year, I've got to go. That you've got to go to the movie theater. They and whenever you do that...
They drew people out. They drew them out of their houses.
Mm-hmm. To make it almost more of a habit of going out to movies again. And what's hard now, I think, though, because before when they, I don't know if it was just logistics or whatnot, when they would only have like one or two theaters that they'd be playing this movie in.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a bunch of other ones that nobody's really going to go see. So when those two sold out and people were like, oh, it sold out. Well, let's go see The Pastor's Son, you know, and so suddenly that would get a lot.
The John Travolta movie.
Yeah. So suddenly that would get a lot of views. But now if you go there, you know, go to a 11-plex.
Yeah.
Five of them are taken up by the Marvel movie.
Okay. Right? Mm-hmm. All right. While we're on the subject, I went online ahead of time and I bought my tickets to Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's coming out. When I looked at the movie times, I almost shit my pants. They have Star Wars playing at 4 a.m.
Oh, my God.
4 a.m. And then every hour on the hour all after, the way up till, like, you know, basically midnight. I think basically the movies stop running right when the bars close.
Yeah.
There's like a 2-hour window where they don't show the movie because I think they just don't want people that are blackout drunk going in there. But I have never in all my days that I never expected that a movie theater would be showing that wasn't a porno house or something showing something at 4 in the morning, a legitimate movie at 4 in a Disney owned movie at 4 in the morning. I mean,
wake up at 3, like, we gotta get to the theater.
Yeah, seriously, somebody's got, I mean, if that was,
are they gonna serve French toast at the concession stand?
I know, right?
Dude, I'm like an Eggs Benedict, please.
I would just stay up late, just do a rail and just power through.
I wish I could. You know what? I'll be honest. I started watching Mandalorian right when I found out it was out. It was like 11 o'clock or something. And I was like, it was like 10:30. I was like, I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna watch it. And I was watching it, and the first part seemed like the first 20 minutes was like really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, man, this story's like a little incoherent. I'm losing it. They're losing me. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I would shut my eyes and I'd open them and I was like, did I miss a little something? No, they were there. Okay, I'm watching.
You were dozing.
And then I was like, I was like, did I fall asleep? Because I don't even freaking understand how they got there. What is this?
Yeah.
So this morning I woke up because the kids have been sick. And so I woke up early. It was like 6:20. I got up and I was like, all right, I got time till they get out. I'm gonna catch from that. I was like, I'm gonna catch it from Carl Weathers' scene. I remember all of
it. Hey!
He's in the trailer.
I haven't seen the trailer.
Action Jackson, come on.
Action Jackson.
I remember him from Predator.
So I got to there. I went to there and I watched it and I was like, I'm watching this. I'm like, holy shit, I fell asleep. Yeah. I was just falling asleep and just open, like I would shut my eyes and wake up like 15 minutes later, apparently. Like I was missing all these funny things, the things that I found funny. And then like whole big chunks of scenes that I slept through, apparently. But I just, my eyes just kept closing and opening, and this, I just, apparently my blinks were like 15 minutes apart. I was like, oh no, this is a well-crafted, thought-out story. Right? This is not the piece of shit I went through.
Now you, now you know what it's like watching a movie on weed. I went to, I remember I was, I think I was still in college, and in the movie, what was that movie with all the LA Confidential? The movie LA Confidential came out. And this friend of mine's like, hey, man, let's go see this movie. So we went to go see the movie, and we smoked so much weed in the parking lot. And then we went into the movie, and I was like, yeah, yeah, I'm ready for this, right? You know, because it was a movie with a lot of dialogue, a lot of acting. And it was kind of touted as being like an older style, almost like a noir movie, right? I was like, there's this guy and that guy, and somebody got killed. And by the end of the movie, I could not tell you what was going on. And I would—I didn't fall asleep. I was watching it in a theater. I was, and by the end of the movie, I'm like, oh, I don't know what's happening here.
Like, is that an enjoyable thing, though? As someone who's just,
You know, not for me, not anymore, no. Like, if I'm going to, personally, if I like to smoke weed, it's usually, I've been sober lately, so I'm not, but usually for me, if I'm going to, I'll just smoke just a little bit to kind of take an edge off and make me more relaxed. And sometimes it does help the appreciation of an art, because what it does is it makes you, you're kind of forgetting about your problems, and it that's why I go to the movies anyway, is an escape, right? The movies are just a beautiful escape, but this kind of like just launches you right into it. Like, if I, like last time I went to go see the Will Smith movie, The Gemini Man. Right. And right before going in there, I had a tiny little joint roach, and I just puffed it, just like literally just two puffs, and then walked in the theater. And I'm not blasted. My mind's not gone. Right. But now I'm relaxed. I got a soda. I'm watching the movie, and I was able to just get into it right away, and I'm not worried about my bills or what's my dog going to chew up while I'm gone. You know, none of that stuff's bothering me. You know, I'm just watching the movie. So, you know, and I actually, this is also, it helps in other ways too. Like when you're doing something tedious, like folding laundry or mowing the lawn. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just kind of takes the edge off, and you're not thinking about how much it sucks what you're doing, you know?
Right.
But that's just because now I don't, you know, now I'm also older, and like, I only have so many conscious hours of life left, right? I don't want to waste it. I don't like being wasted anymore. If I get there, it's I get there organically. Like when I was younger, I used to set out to get wasted. I was like, let's go out and get drunk. Like that was the goal, was to get drunk.
You hit an age where it's embarrassing. Because you're like, I didn't mean for this to happen.
Yeah. Shit. Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is like, you got to keep it together. You know, like before it was like, let's get wild, let's get crazy. And now I'm just like, if I get wild and crazy, I'm going to either, I've already started that way before I even started drinking. I was already wild and crazy. Or, you know, the way it is now, it's like, if I get smashed, it's because I was having a good time with my friends and I wasn't paying attention to how much I drank, and I just ended up there.
Right.
Yeah. Back in 2013 when Lyft and Uber started and I was driving for them.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I did nights. And I didn't do that for a long time after. But I would start after 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I would stop driving for Lyft and I'd only drive for Uber.
What's the difference?
Well, at the time when they were really, people were choosing which one to use sort of at the time, it felt like all the college kids were using Lyft, like they were for younger people. And a lot of the older professionals had been using Uber, like the Black's car service, you know, so they knew it from there. So what I was describing it as, I was like, Lyft was all the amateur drunks. The Ubers were the professional alcoholics.
People coming home from the theater.
Yes, coming home from the theater. They were Ballard. When Ballard was, they were still so demographing older at the time. So they were kind of mature. They could hold their they were the people who would be embarrassed that they threw up. And in Lyft, they'd be like high-fiving because of the flag. That was awesome. I raged all night, man.
We made it.
We did it. Like, so it was like 10 o'clock. And I was like, nope, this is when drunk people start coming home. I'm just going to.
When you guys have your plays, who demographically who goes to these plays? Is it more the younger people? Are you seeing
usually the older people? Yeah, usually you'll see some older people. Usually parents of people in the show. But yeah, we do get a relatively younger crowd. Not so much little kids, although I think the first time we did Electric Man, we did have a couple of little kids, which was cool because then they want to take a picture with you and stuff, and you're in your costume. So that's fun. But yeah, usually it's probably, 20s, 30s demographic usually.
It's probably going to be like rap music, how its demographic is going to be older now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like the whole...
Well, I just saw a thing about
rap
how
people are going to be
Wu-Tang Clan's kids have formed their own rap group.
Yeah.
But like there was a time like older, like my parents' age and up, they didn't watch superhero stuff. They weren't into comic book hero. So but now like we're gonna have like 70-year-olds like exchanging comic books.
Right.
Yeah. Soon. When I was a kid and I watched Captain America.
Well, that's also true with that I've noticed in a huge way with video games, right? Because there's whole generation of people that basically like Gen Xers were the first people that really started playing video games at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then after every generation after that has become, I think, progressively more entrenched in video games. But you also have the Gen Xers are starting, they're getting older,
Right, right.
It'll be funny when you're walking into a retirement home and you hear, dun 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 dun.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, this is a classic. I used to play this when I was a little boy. We used to walk both hill up in the snow, both hill both ways or whatever. The hardship story is going to be like, we only had 8-bits. You had a little guy jumping on mushrooms when I was a boy.
I used to have to blow on it to get it to work.
Right. Blow on a cartridge to make the thing work. Can you believe that? We had A and B. Those were our buttons. Those were the buttons back then.
Okay, so we're near the end here. So I want to give you a new segment. Call it the 5 until I get more of these. But it's the 5. So I got some questions for you. So
cool.
5 questions. Just going to answer them and then get you out of here. What's something that you love to eat?
Pizza.
What's something that you love to drink?
Usually Mr. Pibb.
What do you love to create?
I love to create stories. Stories that people can, enjoy, have that like we're talking the escape. Yeah.
Okay. What's a game that you love to play?
I like to, I have an Atari Flashback, so I like to play Frogger.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Frogger is a great game.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And last one. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Whoa, this is the hard question. You started with the easy stuff.
That's how it works.
What do you eat? What do you drink?
Quit ruining my...
What is going to be the thing you remember?
Stop it. Ruining my bit.
I'd like to hopefully be remembered as a great storyteller, but also a loving husband and eventual father. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yep. Well, Adam, thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, thank you. This is great.
Awesome. Be sure to check out the name of your show.
The show is called The Safeguard Society. It'll be at the Pocket Theater in Greenwood. It'll be Thursday night at 6, Sunday night at 6, and Saturday at 4:30.
What's with the dates on those? Make sure.
That would be the 14th, the 16th, and the 17th.
Of November. So this weekend. This weekend drops tomorrow, which is today, because you're listening to it now.
Exactly.
Right? So... Adam Egg, thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, thank you. This is fun.
Black and a half.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by. Join us. Impressive.